The number one thing is that this too shall pass. So our economy had been doing so well for so long, and we knew that, you know, it's a pendulum. What goes one way has to go the other. It's just that nobody expected when it happened we were going to get whiplash, right? And so some reports I'm hearing are predicting that we'll come out quickly, and others say it's going to take a little bit longer. But important thing here to remember is that it will come back. You just have to be able to hold on. And to do that, don't make any impulsive decisions about your money.
Welcome to Captivate the Room with your host, internationally known voice expert, Tracy Goodwin, an award-winning speaker who has taught hundreds around the globe to make a big impact with their voice. This podcast is for anyone who wants to step onto a bigger stage, make a bigger impact, and have a voice that makes people listen. Presentation matters, and the voice is the missing link. Join in and you'll see why.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Tracy Goodwin, and I'm so glad to have you with me today, as always. Thank you so much for your shares and your downloads, and for being a subscriber. I love being on this voice journey with you. And I've got a really great show for you today. But I'm wondering, are you listening to more podcasts now because we're on the lockdown? I'm just curious, are people listening more or less? I don't know, just popped into my mind and I thought I would ask. I have a guest with me today, and I just really, you're going to love this interview. I thought it was so important and so timely because of what is going on in the world right now. I've got Lou Anne Gaffney with me today, and she and I are friends in a group, an entrepreneur group, and we're connected on LinkedIn. So I'm familiar with her work. She's a bookkeeper and she's a money person. And I know that so many people on earth, but so many members of my audience especially, I know that money's on your mind. I know the economy is on your mind. And I've really just been so impressed with Lou Anne and the posts that she does and her knowledge that I wanted to have her on the show. So she's with me today. Let me tell you a little bit about her. Lou Anne is a bookkeeper based in Greensboro, North Carolina, and she enjoys helping businesses stay on top of their finances and believes that education is key. Only by knowing and understanding your business finances can you choose the best path to maximize profitability. Lou Anne spent many years in the classroom as a teacher, so she knows how to explain concepts in languages that are easy to understand. She thinks business finance is fun and can help you learn to enjoy it as well. And it's the truth. She's absolutely delightful. Such a fantastic personality. She's a QuickBooks certified pro advisor and has been working in the field for several years. Previous careers were in music education and working with the North Carolina wine industry as a marketing specialist. While very different fields, each has enhanced the other in unexpected ways. As a business owner herself, Lou Anne understands the complexity and number of hats that job entails. A Renaissance woman of continuous growth, evolution, and reinvention, Lou Anne is a lifelong learner and loves to share her knowledge and passion on various topics. And just as a side note, she comes from a very musical family. Her husband is a professional trumpet player who performs and teaches. Her daughter lives in Manhattan and is a singer-songwriter in Christian and country music. And her son is graduating in May with a master's degree in film score composition. I know you're going to get so much value from what Lou Anne and I talk about today. So let's head on over to the show. Lou Anne, welcome to the show. I'm so glad to have you here.
Thank you, Tracy. I'm excited to be here.
Well, you know, I was really intrigued by the work that you do. And the more I learned about you, and of course, I'll tell the listeners where we met in a minute, but the more I saw the work that you were doing and heard the things that you were talking about, I thought, now more than ever, my people need to hear from Lou Anne. And so I'm so glad you were able to come on the show. I met Lou Ann. I'm in an entrepreneur group on LinkedIn, and we're in the same group. And so I'm very familiar with Lou Ann's work and the things that she talks about. And so I felt like in this crazy time that we're in, it was really valuable. It would be really valuable for me to bring her on and talk to you guys about things that you might be concerned about. So let me just start with, I'm keeping it all shrouded in mystery, you know, I kind of have a mystery going. So let's just start with, tell us what you do.
I do bookkeeping, and that sounds so boring and old school, but there's a new way of doing bookkeeping, and it's very much akin to the relationship between bookkeepers and accountants is very much akin to the way it is with doctors and nurses. And now there's a lot of graying of the lines and crossover because you've got physician's assistants and nurse practitioners. So a modern day bookkeeper is a really different person than the old school who just recorded transactions all day long. And so through bookkeeping, what I do is I partner with businesses to manage their finances so that the people who run those businesses can spend their time working on what brings in the money, what earns them the money, instead of all the things necessary to manage the money. Things like, you know, tracking the income and the expenses, paying the bills, writing the invoices, all that, you know, all that kind of stuff. And the reason I did that and focused there is because I personally am one of those chronically overly busy people, and I know all the hats that business owners have to wear. And so it's really a win-win because I get to specialize in just one area, and then they can focus. And so I can help them grow their bottom line and provide a big value that way.
Yeah, very, very big. And I've learned that the hard way, how valuable someone like you is for a business. But, you know, we were talking before we started, and you have a completely different background. You have a music background. So tell me, I'd like to know, how did you make that shift from music to money?
It's been really cool, Tracy, that ever since I made the shift, I have met so many people who are in the finance world who have backgrounds in music or theater or something in the arts. And for me, I taught elementary school music for decades, and I adored working with the children. They kept me young. And I always had visions that when I retired from that, I would be gray-headed little old lady who could barely drag up from the floor. But instead, when I retired, I was 50, and I was like, you know, I am not ready to travel and just do nothing. I want to still be of service. And so I was thinking about ways that I could serve and work with adults this time, so it would be a change of pace, get in a different field. I discovered bookkeeping. And so after doing it for a while, I went out on my own in January of 2019. The idea behind owning a bookkeeping business and work partnering with entrepreneurs, small business owners, things like that, is that I can provide them the same level of service, financial help, that's available to a lot of bigger businesses and bigger companies who have somebody on staff full time. They don't have to pay any overhead for me at all because I do all of my work virtually. And so everything is done at home, on the cloud. We communicate via email, text, or whatever. But all the work is actually, it's not on anybody's one machine.
So yeah. And so it makes it easy for you, all this virtual email. You could work with anybody anywhere, couldn't you?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And were you ever interested in money and bookkeeping? I mean, what, you just thought that you were just interested in doing that after you left teaching? Or was there something special about managing money that made you want to do it?
Well, my brother's a CPA and my dad was excellent at math. But for me, it was kind of a latent skill, I guess you would call it. But as part of teaching, there came a point in time, and I don't remember when in my career, but I'd say pretty early on, when you had to start connecting with your subject with either math or English. And I just found a natural connection between math and music. things like quarter notes and whole notes and connecting it to fractions and all this sort of things. And after a while, I started actually tutoring math. And so I just have done math as part of my daily work probably for 20 years now, at least.
Wow. You know, I've known a lot of people, like you were saying, about the connection between math and music. I've known so many people that math and music, or even doctors and music, doctors and, you know, all there's a real strong connection there. I didn't get that piece. I didn't get that. I don't have that connection. Well, what is it that you like? Do you have a favorite thing that you like about the work that you do?
I you know, that's a great question. And it's a hard question because I enjoy everything that I do. Mm. I like the nitty gritty of being in people's books so that I know more about the inner workings really of their business than anybody else does except for them. And I love that part because I learn a lot. I like the part of putting together the financial reports and then sharing that with the business owner so we can look at the data and say, okay, what does this show us for the future? Where can we go from this? And you can also, you know, somebody taking time to pay attention, like maybe an electric bill is high 2 or 3 months in a row, and you can't attribute it to the weather. So maybe that's a flag. We need to get a technician to come look at things. You know, somebody taking time to do that, point it out. I love that. I love the networking piece, which is, you know, goes along with the marketing because as a business owner, I do everything for my business. I love doing things like being on your show today. So the wonderful thing for me is that every day when I wake up, whatever my day brings, I just love it.
Wow. That's very cool. Yes. So let me ask you this, and I'm going to actually ask two questions in one. So however you want to answer it. But what I'm curious about is, because I'm not a numbers person, Luann. I don't ever want to say that I can't do it because I don't necessarily believe in that, but I would have to say that numbers and what you do is not my strength. It makes me wonder. Well, two questions. What is it that people get wrong about the work that you do? And what is it, and maybe I just need to let you answer that question, because then I want to know about what it is that you do that can free them up so much. And you maybe have already answered that for me a little bit in your description from the beginning, but tell me what people get wrong. What do people get wrong about the bookkeeper? And maybe even why they need a bookkeeper.
Well, so many people use their business as a personal piggy bank. Mm. And that is a big problem. When I see somebody rack up a huge amount in like meals and entertainment, that's a red flag for me that they're doing that. They're thinking of their business as, quote, free money. And you can't think of it that way. You've got to remember that anything that you frivol away like that is taken away from the bottom line of your business, and your business needs to be like your baby. You want it to nurture it and want it to thrive. So there's that. Along the same lines, a really huge no-no, so to speak, in the eyes of the IRS is mixing your business and your personal expenses. So, you know, all of us have had the experience of running to the grocery store and you go to pay and you accidentally put on your business card, or maybe you're out and you pick up something for the business and you pay for it personally. You know, occasionally like that, a bookkeeper can fix it. It's fine. But when it happens over and over, that just raises a red flag. And, you know, it's much cleaner to pay yourself regularly. Mm. And that's something that everybody should make a priority to pay yourself from day one, you know, rather than, you know, the phrase that comes to my mind is robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Yeah. And, you know, I think, and I don't know, you're the expert. I'm fascinated with this. This is so interesting. And I've heard that from a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Like a question that's always dropped to entrepreneurs is, are you paying yourself a salary?
Right.
You know, and maybe it's a little different with entrepreneurs. I don't know. You could tell me, but that I hear that come up a lot. So that personal piggy bank idea, that really resonates with me. I think a lot of people are maybe doing that without even realizing that there's another way.
Yes. Yes. For example, somebody I know, her husband left her not long after she opened her business. And so she didn't have access to her bank accounts. And so she was putting everything through the business. Well, okay, I get that. But after a little while, go open up another account. You've got to, you know, instead of there being all these withdrawals coming from your account that are labeled personal, just go ahead, figure out what are you going to need, write yourself a check and move on.
Yeah. And I think it's, you know, I don't think that people are, well, I wouldn't think that people are meaning to do some of these things. I think it's just a matter of they don't know.
Right. Not knowing.
Not knowing.
There is a fantastic book that that is called Profit First. The author's name is Mike Michalowicz. And in that book, he outlines how to both pay yourself and earn a profit from day one of your company being in business. And so most people think, you know, it's income minus expenses equals profit. And his premise is, no, it's income minus profit equals expenses. And that really helps you keep things in line. It's a universal truth that the more people make or the more a company makes, then there's also more expenses. But sometimes those expenses accrue higher than they should or faster than they should. They're outpacing the growth. You know, it's also true you need to spend money to make money to a certain extent, but you also have to really kind of monitor, are you going overboard? Did you really need that huge marketing campaign or could you have saved 25% on that? You know, things like that, so that you're always in the black.
I've heard that book is phenomenal. I really want to read that book. I've heard a lot of people talk about that book. And this kind of stuff that you're talking about, this is what you do for your people. You make these suggestions and you point things out that we might not know. Like, I just might not know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And in tweaks, finding ways that they could cut back on. For example, maybe somebody spent a whole lot of money on an advertising. I don't mean to pick on advertising by any means, but
no.
For whatever reason, that just came out again. So, you know, maybe they spent a whole lot of money on advertising and then they didn't get an ROI. So let's make note of that. So next time we get ready to put money into advertising, let's try something else. Let's figure out why it didn't have the results we wanted, as opposed to just continually throwing something against the wall, hoping it sticks.
Man, that is invaluable.
Yeah.
We've got to put your information in the show notes. I'm going to be calling you. Okay. So I'm going to shift gears and I'm going to add it because like I mentioned at the beginning of when we started talking, I love the posts that I see you make on LinkedIn and I love the things that you talk about. And I would be tricking if I didn't say one of the main reasons I wanted you on the show is the obvious elephant in the room, COVID-19, and what the ramifications are for us and money. That's got to be on obviously health and safety and welfare and all of that is crucial, but I can't imagine how there's a human alive that's not concerned about the economics of this. So I really want to get your thoughts because I've seen some of your posts on this and, you know, how has this changed our lives? How has this changed your life? How has this changed the lives of your clients? What are people's biggest concerns that you see right now?
Right. So for me personally, I'm blessed because I work from home anyway. So, you know, when everybody had to start sheltering in place, my life didn't change hardly at all from that. You know, I miss like networking and professional development in person, of course, but, you know, it's been okay. Some of my clients had to temporarily close. And so for those, I reached out to them and said that I was going to temporarily reduce my rates for the next couple of months. But, you know, I just don't think it's fair for me to charge full price when there's less work for me to do on their behalf. And then
is this like brick and mortars?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And funny enough though, I've actually signed a couple of new clients. So, you know, it's kind of like balanced out there, but I think it varies how it's impacted the clients, depending, like, if you've had to shut completely, then obviously there's no expenses. Some of my clients have had awesome landlords and their rent's been reduced, or, you know, they've got forbearance or something.
Oh, wow.
I've got one, and her landlord is refusing to budge, actually even raised rent. I mean,
no,
you know, it's just, you know, been across the board. And so, you know, I've got one or two that I'm concerned there might not even survive this. We'll just have to see.
Okay. But
you know, I think it really varies. It, you know, if you're somebody who's working in healthcare right now, you're probably going to be doing well for quite some time. In other areas, you know, I think it just varies by industry.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I have a client that deals with truckers. And I made the comment, I was working with this person the other day, and I said, I bet they are slammed. And he said, it's very interesting. It's one or the other there. And I hadn't thought about this because I'm thinking, you know, these are carrying these goods. I mean, it's crazy right now. And he said, some of them have so much work, they can't take a breath. And some of them have no work at all. And I said, how is that? And he said, gas tanker trucks.
Yeah.
And I went, oh my gosh, of course. Yes, they're
on their industry, right?
Yeah, it depends on their industry. And you can't switch a tanker truck, a gas truck, into a refrigerated truck. I mean, there's no option there. Mm-hmm. So I can see where maybe you're seeing it across the board,
right,
how much they can do. And I guess some of these online people are just knocking it out of the park too. I see that. We were talking about that, you know, that right, some people are just really, it's just a great time for them.
And of all things, saw a news article about the people who make puzzles, jigsaw puzzles, they can't keep up with demand.
Oh my goodness.
So it's just,
wow, that's fascinating.
Yes, yes.
Well, and the demand for online teachers is, you know, with every single school closed. I mean, certainly in the U.S., I don't know if around the globe, if all the school, I would imagine that at this point, all the schools are closed, but things for kids to do.
Right.
Like I know you teach piano, like piano or art class or crafts or drama or dance, or, you know, all these kids around me are doing their dance classes online.
Yes.
I can't imagine that myself. Well, do you have, I mean, obviously the money, the economy, the outcome, it's huge right now. It's
absolutely,
I've never seen anything like this in my lifetime. I hope I never see anything like it again. But do you, if I were to say to you, what is one solid piece of advice? You may have 10, but, you know, and that's okay too. That's okay too. But can you give us some food for thought? You're panicking about revenue. You're panicking about taxes. You're panicking about whatever. Heavy, heavy thoughts on this economy and money. Do you have some something you could share with us that make us feel better, I guess is what I'm asking.
Yeah. The number one thing is that this too shall pass. So our economy had been doing so well for so long. And we knew that, you know, it's a pendulum. What goes one way has to go the other. It's just that nobody expected when it happened, we were going to get whiplash, right? And so some reports I'm hearing are predicting that we'll come out quickly, and others say it's going to take a little bit longer. But the important thing here to remember is that it will come back. You just have to be able to hold on. And to do that, don't make any impulsive decisions about your money. That's really, really key. Don't just suddenly cut every expense in the world. Don't do any impulse buys. Just really think through things. So one thing that I would do is to go through your expenses like line by line and, you know, channel your inner Marie Kondo and think, is this item serving its purpose or not? Is this something I should keep, should consider postponing or letting go? And think about that. And normally, I recommend paying more than your minimum payments so you can get ahead on credit cards and loans and things like that. But right now, cash is king. And so I would make minimum payments. You know, it's important to keep some cash. So a lot of companies, credit cards and mortgage lenders, things like that, they're offering assistance. You know, they'll let you skip some payments, just tack it on to the end. You know, it varies by company. So you need to reach out. Be careful with rent and mortgage, though, because a lot of those people are giving the forbearance, but they're expecting a balloon payment at the end. And I mean, that's crazy, because if you can't afford your month to month payments, how in the world are you supposed to come with 3 or 4 months worth all at one boom just because your period's ended? So, you know, watch out for that. So my number one suggestion here is to use critical judgment and really think about your choices and the possible consequences of each, and hold on to as much cash as you can, because none of us have ever seen anything like this before. And, you know, it's brand new territory. And so when you've got things like the government coming in and doing these huge stimulus plans and assistance packages, you know, just take advantage of whatever you can.
That's so much goodness. There's so much goodness in what you just said. And I love how you started it, "This too shall pass," because, you know, and I try not to look at the news, but just this morning I saw a post where someone in the government said, "We're heading to the Great Depression part two." And I said, no, we're not. No, we're not. In fact, so I was on a call with somebody the other day, and he said, "What if we never get out of this?" And I said, "This call is over. This call is over. I'm not having that conversation with you." So I'm glad to hear you say that, knowing what you know. You have such a deep understanding of money and finances and economics and all of that I do not. But I've heard you, I've seen some great posts about this cash flow. Okay. So is it it's important for us to keep as much cash right now as possible. Is that kind of what I hear you saying? Talk to us a little bit about cash flow.
Okay, so this is the thing that boggles people's minds. And sometimes if I'm not thinking about it right, it still boggles my mind. But you can have a profitable month and still have cash flow issues. Mm-hmm. And so here's a simple illustration. Maybe you've got like $30,000 in sales coming in on April 30th, but you've got $20,000 worth of expenses due by mid-month. So you've got like a 2-week gap where you're $10,000 in the hole. That's a cash flow issue. You can be profitable and still have cash flow. So what you can do to combat that, the strategy for combating that, is to have people who pay you pay, like, you know, invoices due upon receipt.
Yeah.
On the other hand, for yourself, you get as long a term with your vendors as you can, 30 days if you can. So that gives you a chance to get those, to close that gap as much as possible.
Yeah.
So another strategy is to see if you can change the due date for some of your bills so that it is more in line when the income comes in. Maybe have some of your customers, clients, give them incentives to pay on time or even early, maybe a slight discount or, you know, some sort of special deal. You might cut your profit a little bit, but if you're profitable anyway and it's a cash flow issue and you're closing that gap, then it's worth it.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's good. And I know you mentioned a little while ago that you, with some of your people, you had reduced your rate. And I see a lot of that going on. I'm doing some of that myself, especially in relation to people and doing video. Everybody now all of a sudden that has been putting video, being on video off for 10 years because they could, now they can't, you know, and I want to help those people out. So I'm doing the same thing myself, but that's really great advice on cash flow. That's obviously, as an independent contractor, as a, you know, small business owner, entrepreneur, that's obviously always heavy on my mind, is what's coming in versus what's going out, because there is no paycheck on the 1st and the 15th. I mean, who knows, you know, when you're going to get it. And that's intense for me.
Yes. Yes. And it's, you know, it's something that's, it's kind of like, if you ever get over the hump, you're good, but it's so hard to get.
Yes.
You know, it's just incremental steps.
And that's the bummer for me on this whole deal. I mean, obviously, aside from people are dying and all of that, so don't take me out of context. You know, that is horrific. But, oh my gosh, we were just so strong.
I know.
Economically.
So many people I know who January and February of 2020 were their best months.
Yes.
In like, you know, years. And then suddenly.
Boom.
Yeah.
Yeah. Literally overnight, I lost so much of my, and I'm not alone. I mean, I'm not playing my sad song fiddle, but what do you think about, you mentioned it when we were talking about cash flow, you mentioned about the loans and all the things that the government is doing. How do you have a feel about that? Do you think all that's good? Those small business loans and those non-repayable loans? And
I think it's great, but the thing that's been an issue is that there have been so many hiccups this week and so many people have had trouble accessing them. And some of the big pockets of money that were set aside have already been depleted. And it's just, Yeah. And it's just been, not as smooth as they were hoping it would be. I mean, we're talking government. So who's really surprised, you know?
Yeah.
But I've seen more success with small community banks.
Okay.
And I know that as of last night, the government's plan to inject another huge chunk of money. I think the date I saw was around April the 19th. So there is more assistance on the way.
Okay.
I think if we can get the hiccups worked out, if they can get the money into the hands of these business owners, I think they've really got the best interest of businesses in their mind and in their heart, which I never would have thought I would say something like that. But when there's free money that's not going to have to be repaid, or the interest rates are super duper low, like, 1% for the next 2 years, things like that, just in the hope of keeping people afloat, that sounds like a sweet deal.
Right. Yeah. Okay. I'm glad to hear that. And I, you're definitely right. I was at the bank the other morning, and of course I stood in a line to get into the bank, and I, my eyes just filled up with tears. I couldn't believe I was standing in a line to get in the bank. I mean, it really hit me that day, but there were a number of people in line, and I bank at a big bank, and there were a number of people in line that were, there was a guy from the bank walking up to everybody with his mask on, don't worry, and saying, what are you here to make a deposit, whatever. And a lot of them were talking about, I'm here to talk about a loan. And he would ask them questions, and every one of them ended up walking out of that line.
Wow.
Yeah. So I thought, that I don't know what T's didn't get crossed or what I's didn't get dotted, but I thought it might have something to do with the bigger banks might be harder. And like you say, the smaller, more local banks might be a better place to go.
Yes. And I don't have anything except for my instinct on it. But what I think it is that the smaller ones don't have as many layers of bureaucracy. So they've been more nimble. They can make this happen easier and faster.
Yeah. Nothing against the big banks, I'm not meaning to criticize, but I happened to just be listening and notice the girl in front of me, the girl in front of her, the guy, two people behind, their questions were, not going to happen, and they walked away. Well, I know you said this too shall pass, and I'm going to ask you to pull out your crystal ball. I know you don't have one, but if you did, do you have a feel for what this recovery period looks like? I mean, instinctually, do you think, you said some people are saying quick bounce back, some people are saying long. I mean, what's your gut instinct on this? Kind of being in the know more than I am and we are.
Well, I think it's kind of fun to think about all the ways we will operate moving forward. I'm thinking about how much more flexible work might be going forward.
Mm.
What are people going to value and be willing to pay for that may not have even been on the table previously? I'm hopeful that those who predict a rapid recovery are right, Tracy. Yeah. And I'm also hoping that people are, they're using this time to dig deep into what they want their business to stand for and to offer and, you know, get some real clarity, maybe revisit their why. Is their why still the same? If their why has changed, you know, we all continue to develop and evolve, and what used to fit may not fit. You might have grown past it or through it or in a different direction. And so, you know, how do you take your dream and keep it aligned with who you really are? And, you know, how can you use this time to pivot or to grow? Can you think of new offerings and things that might keep income coming in now, but then when we go back to, quote, normal, whatever that is going to be, keep as additional revenue streams? You know, for example, one of my clients who is a brick and mortar place where you go and you have like adult parties and there's like things to do. So they're doing virtual parties.
Oh, so cool.
How might that might could stay permanently, I'm thinking.
Yeah.
You know, that people could, I guess it's sort of like, you know, when you do the Tupperware parties and things like that, and you go to some of those in person, and then sometimes somebody will host one online.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the kind of thinking and things that I think it's just going to be fun to see how it all shakes out. So that's, might as well look for something positive here.
Right? Oh, for sure. For sure. For sure. And that's, I love that answer so much. I'm doing this beta group right now, this course testers group on this course I'm rolling out, and I have a fitness instructor in there. And I asked her, I said, are you doing a lot of these people in this group or coaching them on video technique? I didn't plan to, but by default I am. And I said, are you doing video training? She's a Pilates teacher. And she said, I am. And I asked her something about going back to the, you know, the studio or whatever. And she said, I think some people are never going to go back to the studio. She said, I think especially at first, people are going to be nervous about, okay, you know, they've lifted the veil, but, and she said, I, and I'm in agreement. I think we've created this whole new thing with this video stuff. And I don't think it's like when they give the okay to go back to the world, I don't think everybody's going to disable their video accounts.
I agree.
I really don't.
I also think a lot of people who have worked in their little cubicle for years and have said, one of these days, I'm going to work from home. I think a lot of people are going to say, oh my God, what was I thinking? That was horrible. I need to be back at the water cooler and have this interaction. And a lot of other people are going to have their eyes open and say, I'm never going back.
Yeah.
I couldn't go back now, you know?
Oh, I agree.
Who falls into which camp, so to speak?
It's, and you're spot on. I have so many corporate people, and half of them are saying, this is kind of a challenge because every conversation I had walking down the hall is now a Zoom meeting. And I'm on the meetings from 9 a.m. till 9 p.m. because every one of those little conversations now has become a meeting. And then I've got other people that have said, I am so much more efficient at home. Mm-hmm. That I don't ever want to go back, you know? So it is, it's really, I'm in agreement with you. It's going to be fascinating to see what this new normal looks like, because I don't think it's going to look like where we started when this happened.
Right.
You know?
I was privileged, Tracy, about 3 years ago to visit Central Europe, and I saw all these big, gorgeous monuments that were erected in memory and commemoration of the Black Plague that was like in the 1300s or something. And this whole time reminds me of that, because I remember seeing these statues and just being in awe that they're still gorgeous and still in these public squares and things. So I'm thinking that maybe sort of where we go from this. This is obviously a watershed historical moment that, you know, I don't know if we're lucky to be experiencing or not, but it's one of those things that it's going to be something that people for literally centuries are going to look back on.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, I probably am telling on myself, and I'm such an in the moment person. And that's a huge part of my voice work, is getting people out of the past and the future. Almost, you know, I guess I'm almost to a fault in the now. Mm-hmm. And this thing really snuck up on me. I was aware of it. I was watching it. You know, my next door neighbor, he was on it. He had his masks and his toilet paper long before I even realized something was going down. And so it really set me back initially because I wasn't prepared. And so that makes me want to get your advice on hope. I hope and I pray every day that nothing like this ever happens again. But how do we prepare for this financially if out of the blue, something catastrophic that shuts our economy down happens? What do we need to have in place? Is it about a 3-month supply of living expenses? Is it about making sure we have enough revenue? I mean, what is it that we need to do? Those of us that got a little blindsided, what do we need to do different moving forward so we don't get blindsided again?
Well, first of all, I think it's important for everybody to give themselves grace because we couldn't help but be blindsided. There was absolutely no way that any of us could have imagined what was coming. And you're right. People should strive to have at least 6 months worth of living expenses in the bank. But you know, so many people live paycheck to paycheck.
Yes.
Is just not necessarily realistic for so many people. So, you know, what I think is that we've gone through this time. Like I went to college in the 80s and I remember being a freshman and, you know, early on, and you get your mailbox was flooded with offers from credit card companies, and you didn't have to have a job. You didn't have to have any qualifications whatsoever. Easy credit, easy money. And then back like my grandparents' generation in the Great Depression, they were so very, very thrifty because they had to make do with what they had, and they had their ration books. And I mean, my grandmother used to, even in the 80s and 90s, she used to wash and reuse saran wrap and tinfoil and things like that. And so, you know, we can get go back to some of that. I mean, not to that extent. I certainly am not planning to wash tinfoil or any of that stuff, but, you know, we need to get more to where we're living within our means as opposed to spending money today that we won't earn until tomorrow.
Oh, that's good. I guilty as charged. Guilty as charged. Yeah, guilty as charged. Not so much anymore, but growing up. And I wonder, you know, it's funny that you said you were in college in the 80s. So was I. And when I think back to the 80s, I think about, I mean, that was a great time. I mean, I personally loved 8-track players. Yeah. I think of the 80s was great, but it was excess. I do feel like
90s too. Absolutely.
Yeah. Our generation was woohoo, throw it out, get another one, you know? And so that looking at that living within our means, I love that. I think that's so key.
You know, even with all that happened in the 2008, 2009 range, we really didn't check our habits at the door. And I think now we really might be changing some of those ways. So, you know, if you can postpone something, postpone it.
Yeah. And that's you where that kind of living in the now, I want it now.
Absolutely.
Is what we have to take a look at.
Gratification, right.
Oh yeah, that instant gratification. And it's everywhere, you know, now with these smartphones. You know, I remember this, I don't even know if Jay Leno's on anymore, but I remember years ago Jay Leno did this skit about calm down. You just punch the button, it has to go to space and get back. You know, it was about flipping out that I just put the search in and I don't have anything on my phone. But that's trained us to I want it now, and I'll get the lease, and I'll get the loan, and I'll get the this, and I'll run the credit card up. And I see it a lot out here. I see people driving cars that I can't even imagine how they're paying for.
Right. It's probably more than their mortgage payment.
Oh, for sure.
Right. Yeah.
For sure. But, you know, I like you mentioned as you were talking about that 6 months of putting that 6 months away, what a noble idea, but we've got to get away somehow from this living paycheck to paycheck, which is, what is it, something like 50% of Americans are paycheck to paycheck? It's huge, right?
Right. And that's why you've got these, I mean, my heart just bleeds for all these people in the unemployment lines who can't get through and all that sort of stuff, because there is no safety net.
No.
You're your own safety net.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You didn't see it coming. Nobody could see it coming. And then, you get hurt. So then you need to figure out, if this were to ever happen again, how can I fix it?
Yeah.
And it's incremental, because you can't, I know, if you're living paycheck to paycheck, $5 a week to start chipping away is what you got to do.
Yeah. You got to make the sacrifice.
Any little thing, right? There are some really cool apps out there, and I can't, of course, right now, can't think of the name of any of them. I think Acorn might be one.
Oh, yeah. I've heard of that.
There's some apps, and what they do is they go into your checking account and they round up expenses from a day and put it aside.
Cool.
So it's almost painless.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's about that sacrifice. It's about that I have to maybe do without something. And that's not the way our parents grew up. You know, my mom and dad had no trouble doing without, if necessary.
Right.
But we live in this generation of, I'll deal with it later.
Right. My grandparents, I talk about them a lot because they lived next door, but they, they were born and, they were adults in the Great Depression. And so they just believed that debt was bad. You didn't have any, if you couldn't afford something, you didn't get it. You saved up in advance for it, rather than now we buy it. It's really the exact same concept. You make a loan payment, so you're paying $500 or $600 a month on something. What if you had paid $500 or $600 a month before you bought it?
Yeah.
Until you had money to buy it. And that was the way they lived. And, that's great. I can't do that. I'd love to, but I think it would be great if we could all work towards that.
Oh yeah. I remember when I first moved out here to LA, and it was the first year I was here, and I had a list of, I like to pretend like I know what I'm doing. I make my list and stuff, but I'm not very good at it. But I make my list of all the monthly expenses. And I don't know why I did this, but one time I looked at all the interest that I was paying a month. And I was gutted, because some of these cards and some of the, you just buy new furniture, you put it on the card, you buy this, you take this program, you do the payment, but whatever. Right. And it was in the hundreds a month.
Yes.
On just interest and payments, they charge you more if you buy into a coaching program or whatever. It's $2,000, but you're going to pay $200 more. But it was unbelievable. I couldn't even believe it. And so I started getting all that stuff paid off, because it was such a waste of money.
Those are so exorbitant, just
unbelievable. And if you don't look, you don't realize. And so just paying minimum payments was barely covering interest.
And a lot of times it's not. A lot of times
it's not.
Minimum payments, your balance is getting higher.
That's right. And I hadn't really paid attention, and I looked at it and I went, okay, this is done. This is done. When I looked at the hundreds of thousands of dollars that I had spent over a 10-year span, it was ridiculous. So we do need a reframe on how we're approaching those kind of things, for sure.
It is painful. And that so many people don't ever look at that. So kudos to you for looking at it.
Yeah.
Because it's one of those things you'd really rather not know. So you just avoid it at all cost, but it's to your own detriment. You kind of have to.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the approach that a lot of people take, is this head in the sand. Whatever, I don't want to see it. I hear that so many times from people that work in the money world like you, you know, that you got to get your head out of the sand. You got to look at it. You're never going to be able to fix it if you don't know what's going on.
Right. And it might surprise you to know that it does not matter if somebody earns minimum wage or if somebody is making multiple millions a year. They still, most people are still having this problem of their expenses are more than their income.
Really?
Yes.
I would not have thought that.
Across income levels.
Wow.
Because as you earn more, then you start thinking you've got to have the lifestyle that goes with it.
Ah, okay.
So that's the trick is if you know your income is a ramen noodle income and that's what you're eating 7 days a week, then you're keeping your expenses in line. But if you are suddenly, you know, steak and caviar and champagne every day, so that's what happens is that anytime people's income goes up, so does their expenses because they're like, oh, I've earned this lifestyle.
Right.
And yes, you need some luxuries, you need some pampering. Just keep your eye on where you are.
And that's why Warren Buffett drives an old Honda.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And we can learn a lesson from Warren. Well, this has been great, Luann. I know I've kept you forever and I probably need to let you go. You just use your voice in such an amazing way. Not only do you use your voice to help people with all of their money stuff, but you also do some music stuff.
I do, yes.
Tell us about that and then we'll wrap it up.
Okay. So I think I said earlier, my first career was in teaching public school music and I taught kids K through 5. And I have had a private studio off and on for all of that time. And so I teach piano and voice. When I was in college, I was a double major. Of the two, I really like to teach piano the most. The methodology and the teaching, all of that is just wonderful. And it's so much more fun than when I was coming along and my teacher used to sit there and hand me the nail clippers or things like that. We don't do that anymore. a lot more fun and friendly. And it's a fun creative outlet. And now that I do work with adults for my main job, it's nice to still work with kids. And so my students, well, I call them kids. My students range in age from 4 to 72.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Most of them are in the elementary and middle school range, but I do have a few that are outliers on either direction.
But yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, you're doing amazing things. Now, do you have room for more clients? You do. Okay. Where do we find you? And I'll put all this in the show notes, but you have a website. Where's the best place to find you? LinkedIn, website?
Yep. LinkedIn is a good one. I'm LinkedIn and my username there is Luann Gaffney. And I also have a website. It is balancedvintage.com, balance with a D, it's past tense. And funny story about the name of my business, actually, I'm a wine aficionado and I know way more about wine than a lot of people do, because I actually went to wine school and you know, that was so much fun. But so I named my business as a nod to my passion for wine. And originally my business is named Balanced Vintage because originally it was going to be like this big overarching company. I was going to do marketing and my husband and I were going to do it together, do marketing and web design and e-commerce and all this stuff. And it was just too big. And so, I also found out that I really don't enjoy marketing as much as I had thought that I would. What I studied for a while was wine marketing. That was my education. And anyway, so I actually got a DBA and my business is now Balanced Vintage Bookkeeping, but I didn't ever change my website. It's still Balanced Vintage. And the whole point is that finely balanced books should be, or are, not should be, but they are as satisfying as a finely balanced vintage of wine.
Oh, how clever. I love that.
Yeah.
So that is so clever.
That's the name of my company. Yep.
Okay. Well, we'll put this in the show notes. I'll put your LinkedIn link and your website link in the show notes. And then you guys can reach out to Luann and have a conversation with her about how she can help you with all your bookkeeping and money and planning for the next phase, whatever that is, so that we're all a little more prepared.
Absolutely. If anybody is thinking that they have a gap between income and expenses, I can talk through some strategies on closing that. We call it closing the success gap.
Cool.
So yes, I'm more than happy to do consultations.
Oh, good.
Or bookkeeping. Yes. So sure, you guys reach out. And it's been a pleasure, Tracy. I appreciate the chance to come and speak with you, and I've enjoyed the topic, and you ask great questions.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, I was good. Well, you just gave us so much valuable information, and I knew that I just had to get you on the show because I know that with everything else, but especially people have money on their mind right now. I mean, the economy and people are in a bind. And so I knew just based on knowing you that it would be so valuable for you to shed some light on us and really in many, many ways, give us a little bit of hope.
Yes, that's what it's all about.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Thanks, Tracy.
Thank you so much for being here. And thank you, listeners. As always, I appreciate you so much. But I'm going to go ahead and wrap it up for today. Until I see you next time. You know what to do. Get out there and speak your truth. Just do it beautifully.
Thanks for listening to Captivate the Room with Tracy Goodwin. You can reach out to her at captivatetheroom.com and be sure to grab the Voice Formula, a free video series that will help you start making a bigger impact with your voice today. If you've enjoyed this episode, please leave a review on iTunes.